For news you need to know, listen to Off the Hour, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. From Montreal, across Canada, and around the world, we have it all. Hard-hitting reports, eyewitness interviews, and in-depth documentaries exploring the issues without the corporate spin doctoring.
You know, there are two ways to go through life. One is to believe everything. The other is to believe nothing. Both ways avoid thinking.
Catch the news on Off the Hour, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM.
It's just past 5 on Tuesday, November 7th. You're listening to CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. I'm Jules Bijal. From 5 to 6 p.m. today, you're going to listen to our Local Journalism Initiative Roundup. It's a collection of stories I produce for the station with the support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada. You can listen to these stories as well as our back catalog on ckut.ca/LJI. Today on the program, we're covering the Common Front strikes that saw hundreds of thousands of public sector workers on the picket line yesterday. Those workers are asking the province for higher pay and better working conditions in education, healthcare, and other social services. You'll hear interviews with reps from two of the four big unions in the Common Front, the CSQ and APTS. You'll also hear about a new language requirement for temporary foreign workers. Last week, the province announced that after 3 years, these workers will have to pass an oral French exam if they want to stay in the province. The CAQ and the Parti Québécois say it makes sense that workers speak French while in Quebec. But the Immigrant Worker Centre says the new requirement is unrealistic and unfair. That's all covered later on in my interview with the IWC's Chulky Yoon on the program. But first, the provincial government tabled their fall economic update today. Finance Minister Éric Girard announced that over the next 5 years, the province will devote $4.3 billion to affordable housing, fighting homelessness, job training, climate change adaptation, and incentives for business development. Now, this is sounds like a lot of investment for the province, but just remember that $900 million of this is a federal investment already announced to support affordable housing. That's going to be net matched by another $900 million from the province. Here's Éric Girard tabling that announcement today.
Le plus important étant, bien sûr, 1,8 milliard pour construire 8 000 nouveaux logements abordables, dont 500 sont réservés pour les personnes en situation d'itinérance.
So what he's saying is that the target is 7,500 units of affordable housing with this money. 500 units of housing will go directly to the homeless, but there was little to no mention of social housing in the announcement. That's despite the CAQ having voted in favor of Manon Massé's motion last month to devote the full $1.8 billion to social non-market housing. Here she is announcing that motion in the National Assembly.
Pour nous, l'important, c'est de s'assurer que ce 1,8 milliard-là serve le logement social hors marché.
So right now we're seeing what's a battle between defenders of social and affordable housing play out in the parliamentary sessions over Bill 31 as well. Contained in that bill is a change from, the government putting money to social housing towards that same money being used for affordable housing projects, with the creation as well of the FAC instead of the older housing program, Accès Logis, where the money was really devoted to social housing. Now, critics from the Liberal Party and Québec Solidaire, as well as groups like De Reclac and Frappru, say that this affordable housing is really anything but, and they want housing investments that go and support the most vulnerable people in the province. Now, these groups say that despite the opposition to Bill 31 in the province, the economic update indicates the CAQ has no intention of shifting gears or changing priorities on housing. But one area where we have seen a movement is public transit. Now, transit agencies in the province made waves when they announced a $2.5 billion deficit over the next 5 years. Without help from the province, internal documents alleged that they were considering cutting frequency of service and reducing operating hours across the Greater Montreal network. Quebec Minister of Transport Genevieve Guilbeault has announced that the government will take on 70% of this year's projected deficits. Negotiations about the coming years haven't been settled yet, but we're going to discuss all that and more today with Lancelot Rodriguez, who's a doctoral student in urban planning at McGill. That interview is coming up in just a few minutes after a musical break. Thanks so much.
We'll be right back.
All right, we are back live on air with Lancelot Rodriguez. Lancelot, do you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Can I just ask you to introduce yourself?
Yes, of course. So my name is Lancelot Rodriguez. I'm a PhD student in the School of Urban Planning here at McGill University, and I'm studying the financing of public transit.
Okay, I think we're having a little bit of technical difficulties with your audio. It's coming through a little bit echoey. I don't know if there's anything you can do on your end. I'm sorry about that.
Can you hear me all right now?
It's still a little bit garbled.
Let me just...
These are the joys of live radio, folks.
Yeah.
All right, how are things sounding now? Lancelot, are you there?
Can you hear me better now?
It's still a bit rough. I think I'll let you go, and we're going to air a later clip instead. We'll come back to our interview in a little bit, but we'll see what we can do, you and I, in the meantime. Sorry about that, folks. So just give us a moment, and you will hear from Lancelot later in the program. Thanks.
Open the door. Seek new world. In here, Security 90.3 FM from Montreal.
Last week, the CAQ announced a new immigration target of 50,000 people for 2024 and 2025, instead of the 60,000 they'd previously floated. But the big surprise on Wednesday was a new language requirement for temporary foreign workers. These workers will now have to pass an oral French exam if they want to renew their permit after 3 years in the province. Agricultural workers are exempt from this change. The CAQ and the PQ say it makes sense that workers speak French while in Quebec, but the Immigrant Workers Center says the new requirement is unrealistic and unfair. I spoke to Chulky Yoon of the Immigrant Workers Center about how the change is going to impact the thousands of temporary foreign workers already in the province. Here's our conversation. This week, the federal and provincial governments announced new immigration targets. And along with new immigration targets, this week, Quebec announced a new language test for temporary foreign workers. What do we know about that language test so far?
So actually, the language test itself, it's not a new thing. The new thing is that the test is now imposed to the temporary foreign workers too, because of the language test, the result of the language test was required for the immigration process to get the CSQ certificate de sélection du Québec. To get access to the permanent status, so it has been required since very long time. So the test itself is not new, but imposing it to the temporary foreign workers, it's something new.
How realistic is this language requirement? Where are temporary foreign workers typically coming from? And in the IWC's experience, you know, how much French do temporary foreign workers get exposed to when they're on the job in Quebec?
That depends on the sector. So in terms of the statistics, the biggest number of people are coming from like Latin America, including like Mexico and Guatemala. But most of them are working in the agricultural sector. And also a lot of people are coming from Philippines, like including the caregivers, home caregivers, and also all different sectors. The sector of work employment of the migrant workers from Philippines is really diversified. And also over the last recent years, there's a growth of the temporary foreign workers coming from Africa, particularly the sub-Saharan regions. So for those who are coming from sub-Saharan Francophone countries, the French itself, it's not a huge problem, but still it's a problem. I'm going to tell you later. And for those coming from Latin America, of course, it's not easy. But compared to those who are coming from Asia, and it's relatively accessible because it's still in the same Latin language category. For those who are coming from Asia, it's really, really difficult to reach the required level. And also their working conditions does not allow to improve substantially their French language, because in many cases they are isolated and they are exhausted. So in that situation, it is difficult and to reach the final level 7 to get the permanent residence, it's in most cases almost impossible. And level 4, it's much lower than level 7, but it's so difficult. And particularly those who are totally isolated, like caregivers, it's almost impossible.
So the test that temporary foreign workers are going to get, the French test, it's been billed as, you know, just conversational French. I think the Parti Québécois even said that it wasn't enough just for someone to be able to order a coffee or a beer. That's the kind of level of French this is being billed as. But you're saying that for workers and especially caregivers, this is a really high barrier.
Yeah, it's already really high. So level 4 itself is not easy if they did not learn the basic level of French before they come. And their working conditions here does not allow to improve substantially their French language. And also, even though it's only oral test, still there are two sections, oral expression and oral comprehension. And also that is important to know that the oral comprehension section is based on the online test. So that means the candidates that they have to take the test on the computer. So for those who are not familiar with using the computers, they don't get the result corresponding to their level. And actually, so we have seen so many cases who are native Francophone people who came here, who speaks French far better than me, but who don't reach level 7 to get the immigration. So on the one hand, because level 7 is already high, but also the modality of the test itself, for those who are not familiar with that, it's not easy.
If the temporary foreign worker program, the workers are coming on closed work permits. Now they have, if they want to stay in Quebec more than 3 years, they have to do this language test to meet this new requirement. Conversational French. I think the Parti Québécois even said that it wasn't enough just for someone to be able to order a coffee or a beer. That's the kind of level of French this is being billed as. But you're saying that for workers and especially caregivers, this is a really high barrier.
Yeah, it's already really high. So level 4 itself is not easy if they did not learn the basic level of French before they come. And their working conditions here does not allow to improve substantially their French language. And also, even though it's only oral test, still there are two sections, oral expression and oral comprehension. And also that is important to know that the oral comprehension section is based on the online test. So that means the candidates that they have to take the test on the computer. So for those who are not familiar with using the computers, they don't get the result corresponding to their level. And actually, so We have seen so many cases where native Francophone people who came here, who speaks French far better than me, but who don't reach level 7 to get the immigration. So on the one hand, because level 7 is already high, but also the modality of the test itself, is for those who are not familiar with that, it's not easy.
If the temporary foreign worker program, the workers are coming on closed work permits. Now they have, if they want to stay in Quebec more than 3 years, they have to do this language test to meet this new requirement. What are you hearing from workers about this change? Is there a kind of sense of frustration of having such a hard time becoming a part of Quebec society, but then also being asked to contribute in this new way, you know, meet this new requirement?
Yeah, for non-Francophone workers, migrant workers, it's a disaster, a frustrating situation. Because, so particularly with the consultation at the beginning, what they said is that, so this consultation is more focused on the permanent immigration, not on the temporary site. So that was what they announced. And during the consultation, there have been a lot of critics about this approach because there is a growing number of migrants with temporary status in Quebec. And the increase, particularly within the temporary foreign workers program, the increase was much more important in Quebec, the most important in Quebec. Is far more important, almost a triple than the average in Canada. So it's the government who really promoted. And so the people that came here, so based on their promotion, so actually including the IWC and most of the organizations helping the migrants, so their main demands was that facilitate their access to permanent residence. Most of the workers within a temporary foreign workers program, they cannot get permanent residence. And while the whole majority, so like more than 80%, are in the unskilled jobs, and they will, at the end, will never get access to permanent residence. For example, if you compare the number of work permit holders that received it in Quebec from 2015 to 2022, so particularly in the temporary foreign workers program, those who got a permanent residence, it's just 1.83%. So less than 2% get access to permanent residence, and 80% will not get the permanent residence. But still, they have to reach level 4 in Quebec. And in that sense, actually, there's no interest for them. While they cannot live permanently in Quebec, but staying a few years as temporary foreign workers, but have to reach their French level, take the test. There's no interest, real interest for the temporary foreign workers in this situation.
What would it take? What would incentivize workers to actually learn French? If this is the big goal of Legault and the CAQ government, what would the IWC and the workers you represent, what would you like to see that would be a good solution for workers and also allow them to participate more fully in Quebec society? What would need to happen?
Rather than excluding based on the French level, we have to facilitate their learning process. And first of all, getting the permanent residence, so stabilizing their life, it helps. It gives more chance to learn French better. So instead of excluding with high criteria, facilitate their access to permanent residence, and then give access to French class, etc., then it'll help to improve the real French. And also working conditions affect a lot their access to Francization programs. After the intense working hours, and often there are many people who are working like overtime, 10 hours, 12 hours, and also for accumulating jobs, like two jobs, what they say is that actually they don't have enough time and energy to learn French. So that's the biggest condition. So the government said that they are examining the way to imposing kind of obligation to the employer to give access to a French class within the normal working hours. but they didn't present yet the detailed approach. So that's a good approach, but to which extent it will be put in place, because we know that still there are so many employers who are not following the rules and laws already in place, then how they can impose and ensure the good functioning of the approach is a question.
All right, that was my interview with Chulky Yoon of the IWC. If you want to hear the rest of that interview, as well as more coverage on what's happening with temporary foreign workers in the province, you can always head to LJI page on CQUT's website. That's cqut.ca/LJI. But right now I have a guest live with me in studio. Thank you so much, Lancelot Rodrigue, for joining us. Can I just get you to introduce yourself?
Yes, of course. So my name is Lancelot Rodrigue. I'm a PhD student in the School of Urban Planning at McGill, and I conduct research mainly on transportation, but at the moment on the funding and financing of public transit.
Yeah, so we are having our interview a little bit belatedly in the program about funding public transit in Quebec and especially here in Montreal. So let's just get right into it. Can you walk us through what exactly has been going on? Public transit has really been in the news these past few weeks. What's been happening there?
Well, to understand the full picture, we have to just walk back a couple of years to COVID and the effect that COVID had on public transit. What it led is to a lot of people did not take public transit during the COVID pandemic, and fare revenues went down a lot. So public transit agencies ended up having huge deficit that still linger over to this day. And the main issue that we've been hearing about in the news lately is about funding, but for the next 5 years. So what are we doing about the deficit that's been dragging on, which is estimated to $2.5 billion in the province of Quebec for all transit agencies? And who's going to pay for it is the main question that we've been dealing with between, and it's a back and forth between municipalities, regional governments, and the provincial government.
Yeah, how did we get how did we end up with such a big deficit? How did we get to this point where it's, negotiations going back and forth between regional transit planners and the government, and the government has talked about it in terms of, this is what we're putting on the table. These are our negotiations. How did it get to the level of, $2.5 billion where we don't know where it's coming from?
Well, one big element is that during COVID, the main argument that was made in Montreal was to not cut any service, even though no one was taking it. But in perspective, that might have been a mistake in the sense that it would have been better maybe to look at which line, what people needed the most and keep these service, make sure that these are in line, that these were there, but to reduce service elsewhere, to reduce costs, to avoid this type of long-term deficit. But this was not necessarily done. We kept almost all of the service running. So we accumulated deficit through that. And then there's also the biggest problem as well is inflation, which impacts a lot all of the fuel and the different goods and services that go into getting to produce a public transit service for people to use.
Yeah. So these are some of the short-term pressures, right, that we faced in the last couple of years. But I think what this kind of back and forth unlocks with the province and the transit authorities is like a big question about, how are we actually funding transit? And is there anything in that model that might need to be tweaked? I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes, I think that's the core of it, is really how are we funding transit? In the case of Montreal, for instance, transit before the pandemic was funded around 30% by fare revenues, 30% by municipalities, 30% by the provincial government, and then like 10%, which is like miscellaneous, and then includes like gas tax revenues and all of this. But the main problem with this is as you, through time, through the last few years, we've seen an increase in the share of funding that comes from municipalities. But municipalities don't necessarily have the financial means to be able to fund all of this because they mainly fund themselves through property taxes. So at the end of the day, it's really more like, are we still going through the element that it's mainly property taxes from municipalities, and then we ask at a piece every time for the provincial government to give some more fund for operation, or are we actually finding a long-term solution, money that's earmarked for public transit to make sure that we have like previsibility over a long-term period to be able to fund public transit?
Yeah, so then when people are looking at this particular, I don't know if a conflict is the right word, but maybe the funding shortfall, right? Like, how do we actually wrap our heads around it? Is it a handout from the provincial government? Is it, like that the government should be giving money more often and with more stability? It seems like you're pointing to the latter. Like, what would folks within the sort of urbanist or transit community, what would they like to see to make sure that our funding for, you know, essential public transit is just more resilient going forward?
Yeah, the main thing I would say is diversifying revenue sources. That's a big thing. So being able to maybe have some part of income revenues directly earmarked for public transit, or sales revenues with the help as well, maybe giving taxation rights to municipalities to be able to put in place or increase car taxes and all of these elements. That's one part. But the other part as well, which is the argument the provincial government is making, is that it's not just about adding more money, but making sure that, that the money we have now is spent as efficiently as possible, which is a fair argument in the sense that there's some adjustments that need to be made from public transit agencies to make sure that they're actually using the revenues that they have as efficiently as possible to deliver the best service, but without exorbitant costs.
Yeah. You know, and as you mentioned, that the government has agreed to give what they estimate to be for the next year around 70% of the budget deficit. They're going to, you know, eat that cost. The next year is up in the air, right? It's not clear, but this is a big jump from the roughly 20% that they had initially agreed to. But along with that comes a need to do kind of an audit of these transit agencies and see what needs to be changed. That's still only 70%, or the transit agencies themselves say, well, actually, it's closer to around 60%. But, you know, it's not the full 100% of this deficit that we are seeing addressed, and it's only 1 year of it. So if we don't see that funding going to these agencies, you know, how is that going to impact users? What are transit users going to experience as they take these systems that don't have the same amount of money to keep it chugging along the way it used to be?
Well, yeah. So if the lack of funding end up going down like that, it's impossible to make up the funding from other sources, then the main thing that's going to happen is primarily service cuts. The cuts have been talked about like closing the metro at 11 or during the at 11 p.m. or opening at 9 a.m. in the weekend. They're more like tactics to maybe like negotiation tactics, because the reality would be more that the frequency of service would decline on the metro, on the buses. Maybe some bus lines would be removed or redesigned to minimize costs. So that would be the main elements. And it would probably affect more areas that already have less service. So if we're thinking about like the region, the Montreal region, would probably affect more the suburbs or these areas where there's less service. So any cut is really more impactful than if you have like a really high frequency and you cut just a small portion of those, you still have a good enough service. But at the end of the day, any type of cuts or fare increase, for that matter, if you want to make up the money through fares, is going to lead to important reduction in ridership, which is going to feed back into a negative circle on and on and on, which is not going to help in solving the problem in any way.
Yeah. So what you're saying then is it's, you know, there can be changes that these transit agencies make to make up for the shortfall. But really what we need is like more money, more stability, and to just be forward thinking about like where this money is coming from. Am I hearing you right?
Yes, exactly. And like and you mentioned the audit process the government would put in place. What that kind of, there's already like in the plans for the RTM, which is the Regional Transit Association, to have some sort of not audit, but like performance measure being associated with the funding for all the transit agencies, so the STM, the STL, the RTL, and EXO. But this hasn't been put in place, so this could help further. But like overall, it's still like there needs to be a consistent amount of funding to allow that to make sure that we're able to have the service at least remain the same, and hopefully increase through time to increase ridership and to shift people from cars to public transit.
All right. Well, fingers crossed that we come to a solution. But in the meantime, thank you so much, Lancelot, for joining us and helping explain all of that.
Thank you for having me.
Yesterday, on November 6th, around 420,000 workers in the province went on strike for higher wages and better working conditions. Those strikes were organized by the Common Front, a coalition of the CSN, CSQ, FTQ, and APTS unions. It's the first time in decades that the big public sector unions in the province are coming together to the bargaining table. A big demand from workers in those unions is a salary that keeps a pace with inflation. They're asking for inflation plus a little bit more each year for the next 5 years, coming to around 20% salary gains by 2027. The province's latest offer, meanwhile, is just over 10%. The roughly 15% figure they often use is their offer for salary and benefits together. On Monday, I spoke with two union reps, Eric Gingras, president of the CSQ, and Caroline de Tartimonon, national rep for the Centre-Sud local of the APTS. Here's those conversations. Hi, Eric. This is Jules from CKUT. Thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, I know you've had a busy day, so we can get into it pretty quickly. How has your day been on the picket line? What's been happening?
Actually, it was a good day. People were excited and hopeful that Monsieur Legault will hear them, with them strong, loud. And I think, you know, it's the kind of day that people look around and see all the solidarity that's been going on with parents, patients, and other unions. So yeah, it was a good day today.
You know, you went on the picket line representing over 400,000 public sector workers who are asking for a better deal right now. Just what exactly are you guys asking for from the provincial government?
Well, first, it's better working conditions. If you want to attract more people, because now that's one of the big problems. We have problem to attract workers in all sectors of the public workers. You can be in the schools, hospitals, all over the place, colleges. So it's the first thing, is to attract and to keep them. So better working condition, of course, better salaries. So that's why we're asking to protect them against inflation, to be able to come in the morning to know that help is going to be around. If you're a teacher, you know that there is support staff all around you that can help, and vice versa. So instead of going again like it was at the beginning of the school year this year, missing around 10,000 workers, educators, teachers in Quebec. So we don't want to go next 2 or 3 years like that. So that's why we're asking better working condition in order to have more workers. I the example in the school system, but it's all through the healthcare system, colleges, all over the place. Yes.
Yeah. So that, you know, there's a lot of obviously education workers in the CSQ, which you're the president of, but you know, it wasn't just the CSQ who voted in favor of a strike mandate. It was 95% of all Common Front members, right? These are unions in education, in healthcare, across the public sector. Why do you think that this has been so popular? Like, what is it at a structural level across these different types of work that people are saying, you know what, I'm fed up, I've had enough, I'm walking out?
I mean, maybe the past 2 or 3 years, we've seen what's been happening in the public sector. If you go into hospitals, you see that it's hard to find. If you go in a classroom, it's hard to find teachers. And it's same thing with support staff, same thing with educators, same thing with therapists, same thing with all different kind of workers. So that's why they said, hey, this time around, let's be all together, because we have the same problems. We have the same needs. So that's why the first thing they asked us to be together. And when they voted in 95% for the mandate that we asked them, it's also, like you said, a way to show how fed up they were, but how the expectations would be high this time around, not only about salaries, but about working conditions too.
Yeah, I've spoken to other union reps, and they've told me that obviously the pandemic maybe intensified problems, but it also just brought to light weaknesses or difficulties that were already in our public sector, right? That workers were already experiencing. You know, is that kind of what you're hearing from the membership, that these were common problems, these were persistent problems, but then you had maybe the government suddenly calling you guardian angels and saying you were the most mm-hmm. important to keep the province going, and people are, I guess, dealing with kind of the contradiction in that? Is that fair to say?
Of course it is. But the thing is, like, in the unions, union representatives like I am, maybe for the past 5, 7, 8 years, we saw it coming. We saw that there would be we would miss teachers in classes. We saw that it wasn't going well. We were raising our hands saying, listen, we have to take care of people, because maybe 20 years ago, working in the public sector was something good. But nowadays, people choose to go elsewhere. So we saw it coming, and then the pandemic came about. And then we saw in a short period of time how difficult it was, because they have to be in the front line. So that made a difference, but we saw it coming. It wouldn't be true to say that it happened from a day to another. We saw it coming, but nobody was listening. Now they're listening. Population is listening. So that's why there's a big, I don't say fight, because it's not about fighting. It's about having a good deal in order to have better services in Quebec. So that's why it's a very important negotiation that we're dealing with right now.
In terms of the numbers in the strike, this is, I think, the biggest strike we've seen since 2015. From then till now, the past 8 years, you know, there hasn't been the kind of big labor actions that we're seeing this fall. What has, I guess, changed, or what hasn't changed in those years? You're saying that you guys saw this coming. Why has it taken 8 years to really reach the level of, I don't know if a crisis is the right word, but this united common front where you're just saying things have built up for so long, we can't take it anymore?
Yeah, well, maybe two things, because it's true that last time was 2015, but even 2015, we never walked out all together on the same day. So that's a big difference. It's been 40 years that we didn't do that in Quebec. 420 members in the public sector. And we even announced today that for the November 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, for 72 hours, we're going to be all out together. And that never happened in the past 40 to 50 years. And what happened maybe during, like you said, the last eight years, or even maybe the last 40 years, is that I think it's the basis of when you work with public in those working in those systems, like a healthcare system or education system. You know, people are there to help people. People helping people. And when you do that, you don't think about yourself first. You think about patients. You think about kids. You think about parents. You think about all people that you work with, and you don't think about yourself, because you're there in order to teach, in order to take care. And that's what they're doing. But now, after all these years, they're saying, listen, after what we saw in the pandemic, being called angels, like you said, they say, hey, it's maybe time in order to think about us, because other people, my colleague, what they're doing is like they're thinking about themselves, because they're leaving. They're leaving to go elsewhere. And that is one of the main thing that people are telling us right now, is like they're not thinking only about themselves, but they're saying, if we want to keep on doing what we're doing best, taking care of people, helping people, we need colleagues around us. We need better working condition, or else it won't be services that we're going to be able to give. And maybe they're going to go elsewhere too. So that's why we need to attract and to keep them in the working in the public sector.
I mean, this is obviously very different from what we've been hearing from François Legault and Quebec Treasury Board President Sonia Lebel, who have really said that the offer that the province is tabling keeps apace with projected inflation and is generous. Sonia Lebel has even said the ball is now in the union's court, that you and the Common Front need to do more to meet them halfway. What do you make of this kind of language from the provincial government? Is that how you guys are seeing it from the other side of the coin?
It's so unfortunately tactics from 3 decades ago. That's how we used to, that drama that happens in the public sector with the premier and the president du Conseil du Trésor that goes in the media saying they're asking for more money. It's going to be taxpayer money, a billion, and they're giving big numbers. But this negotiation is not about that. It's about services. You can talk all of the big numbers that they're telling, and it's part true, because it's true that if you represent, like for us, 420,000, and there's more than 600,000 workers from the public sector. Of course, if you give them $400, it's going to come up to hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. But that's not the point. The point is, when you need a kid to have a teacher, that's what you need to talk about. And it's not about those union that are saying this and that. It's about, are we going to have good public services in Quebec? And that's the problem right now, because that's the problem for the government, because population understands that. And it's not like 20 or 30 years ago when we used to talk about that. People were actually saying, I give them a percent more and it's gonna settle everything. It's not about that. It's about working conditions and to have schools, to have nurses, to have hospitals that are really going to have services for all the parents and patients and everything. So that's why maybe the best thing to do for population is continue to give pressure government to François Legault to settle everything and to have a deal done as soon as possible. It's not a union battle. It's a population's battle too.
The FIQ Nurses Union in the province, they're striking later this week. Another education union, the FAE, will start their general strike later this month. You know, these are not part of the Common Front. You've got 420,000 members. They've got tens of thousands of members. Even unions that aren't part of the Common Front, you all seem to be timing strike actions together. I don't know whether this was intentional, but it's presenting even more of a Common Front to the government. For the Common Front, your demands are around 20% salary increase. What the government has offered is around 10%. That's a really significant gap after many, many months of bargaining. If we don't see movement from the government, could Quebecers expect to see an unlimited general strike from you or even across the public sector more broadly?
We do have a mandate if we have to go all the way through the general strike. It's not what we want. And we actually said today that even though we have a date for November 21st to through November 23rd, but actually let's give the chance to negotiate in the next 2 weeks. We're ready. We're there. We're able to negotiate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the next 2 weeks. Are we going to have to go to general strike? It's not what we want, but we do have a mandate and we are serious about it. And of course, there's a gap between what we're asking, they're giving, but actually what they're offering is not even close to what the inflation rates are in the works, even for the next years and the years before. And that's a big problem right now, because they're, like I said before, negotiating like it was 3 decades ago and expecting us to have a meeting at 11:45 at night and settle with one more and 1 or 2% more. It's not what people are expecting right now. expectations are high, because people know that if they compare salaries to what they've been receiving in the public sector right now, and they go elsewhere, other sectors, private sectors, municipalities, federal, they know that everywhere else salaries are higher. If you go in another province, outside of Quebec, wages are higher. So that's why they know, they saw what's been going on in the past years. And of course, they're saying now it's our time, and our time is for services to be to have better services and more people to give them. That's the main thing. You need colleagues to come back, colleagues to keep staying in the sectors that they work into.
Can I get you to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Caroline Letart-Simoneau. I'm a political representative for the APTS.
As you can hear in the background, for any listeners, we've got a lot of noisemakers. We've got cars honking. What exactly is happening?
Well, actually, we are on our first day of strike. It's the Front Commun, so there's around the province, there were 420,000 people who were on strike the same day. So we're right in front of the Notre Dame Hospital to do a strike, and it's a quieter time, so it was even louder a little bit earlier before, because people actually are sending a message, a clear, crystal clear and loud message to the government that enough is enough, and it has to be like the government has to give out better conditions to make sure that the health sector, education sector, actually the public services overall get better working conditions.
Yeah, so you're with APTS. What are you hearing from some of the members in your union? Like, what are they experiencing day to day? What is exactly the pressures that they face in their job?
What I hear is, let's say we have our people working with youth sector, like the PG, and what we see a lot is like people come into the health sector, let's say, and they quit because they get better conditions on the private sector. So it puts a lot of pressure on people giving out services in conditions where at some point there's not enough people. So we have to make the conditions people are working in more attirant, so that people will be joining in, and not to give so much of a bad image as well of those sectors. It's not only devotion. People deserve to have better working condition. It's the salary, yes, but it's not just the salary. There's more to it. It's actually even, I would say, it's up to just how we want to preserve the public sector overall. That has to be like a better working condition right now.
Yeah, so what would that look like for the folks who work in this hospital? What are some of the things that they're seeing day to day in their shifts that, you know, in terms of the union, you think should change right off the bat?
Well, it's been really difficult. We see sometimes, depending on the period, we'll see, let's say, hirings, but at the same time, there's more departure than hiring. So the ratio of people working, it's really low. So at some point, we see people doing more temps supplémentaires. Donc, and that puts a lot of pressure at sometimes, because people, let's say you want to have a day off or whatever for personal reason, or just maybe I'm going to be looking for the word, sorry, an aménagement de temps de travail, let's say family reason. Well, it's not going to be given due to the fact that there are so many people missing. And overall, that puts pressure, and people don't necessarily want to stay then, and they'll find something else with better working condition. Or often what we see, not only necessarily here, but in some other services, let's say for déficience intellectuelle, DI, that we call, people who are hired from resource that are paid a different salary, and they're coming out to give out shifts because there's not enough people working to support the system in itself. But those people that you work with are just right by your side, and they get a totally different salary than what you are given, because actually we're missing so many people, so it doesn't make sense, and people get a lot of frustration out of it. We've had the Prime Minister who said he was going to be like an employeur de choix. Well, we don't get to see that so far. So that's why people are sending that kind of message today.
Yeah, and I know we've heard from nurses in the province that bonuses and incentives for working overtime have been taken back. Maybe this is because the FIQ is also negotiating right now. It's unclear, but I've heard as well people saying paying these non-union staff to come in and paying them higher rates. Like, this is a way in which the government is trying to sort of privatize the public sector by stealth. Is that something that your membership is feeling, or what do you feel like the rationale is from the government? Clearly, as you said, your sector is struggling in education. We heard about a 10,000 educator shortage at the start of term. Why is it that the government seems so unwilling to meet your demands?
Actually, the first thing I'd say, they tend to use into like the public opinion overall, give out the image of like the harsh sectors being only an expense. They tend to forget that those 420,000 members are also paying taxes like everybody else. We are also part of the economy itself. And actually, it is true, because there's Bill 15 actually was around the corner, which is a major transformation in the health sector in itself, where there's more opening towards the private sector. So it questions us at some point further along, what are going to be our public services? Are they still going to be free? Or is it going to be only the wealthy ones who could get better services? So that's a question that everybody should actually wonder. What do we want? Is it a real strong value that we have here? I do think so. I think it's a strong heritage and it should be preserved. And it's often also the people that we've seen on the strike lines, they are there because they believe in the services they are offering. The whole organization, it's major. We've seen so many reorganizations in the health sector, but down the line, those people who are here today, they are sending a message, and they are the first one to be on the line to give out services to the population. And so far, they've had enough. They've had enough. Things have to change. For sure.
All right, so those were interviews with two union reps associated with the Common Front. You just heard first from Eric Gingras. Eric is the president, actually, of the CSQ, which is one of the four main unions that is in the Common Front. And this second interview that you just listened to was from Caroline Le Tartier-Monon, national rep for the CAUSS Centre Sud Local of the APTS. We're nearing the end of our program today. Sorry again about the technical difficulties, but I'm glad that we got to have all of the interviews that we were slated to air on the program. If you'd like to learn more, as always, these are the stories that I'm covering at CKUT with the Local Journalism Initiative, funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. And everything I do here is available on cqut.ca/LJI, as well as at canada-info.ca. That's the LJI's platform, and the CKUT site is where my stories live on our website. So as always, you can listen to past broadcasts and individual stories on that page. I've been covering a lot of housing stories, especially Bill 31, and I'll definitely be following up with the announcements made in the fall economic update. But there's also things about labor issues in the province, homelessness, and affordability, because that's a main concern that, you know, everybody in Quebec is feeling these days. But this is the end of our program today. It's almost 6 p.m. and you've been listening to CKUT broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. My name is Jules Bigel. Thanks so much for listening.
What's the matter? Is everything all right? That's okay. I've got just the right thing for you. CKUT 90.3 FM.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the community contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, our community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
For more from our 35 years of freeform broadcasting, visit our website at ckut.ca.
Who is allowed humanity and who is not? Those deaths are tragedies worth praying, concerted attention to, and whose death can be dealt with in a matter of seconds. Whose children are worth learning about, whose heartbreak is worth lingering over, and which people, when confronted by bloodshed, deserve to have the world put everything on hold and rush to their side. The answer is clear. Palestinians are killed by Israel all the time, including when they peacefully protest. But the world never puts itself on hold to bear witness to their heartbreak. So writes Jim Merkinson, an interim senior editor at The Nation magazine. The attacks by Hamas fighters in southern Israel on October 7 and the Israeli air attacks on Gaza that had followed, and now the unfolding humanity.